The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1090. It's the 12th of June, 2018. By the way, try and download the Vox Markets free app if you haven't done it. It's worth trying. You get RNSs, that's company information, news, straight to the front screen of your mobile phone whenever a company you follow releases news, significant news. So literally within seconds. So go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app. All right, download the app. It's free. Search for a company you have interest in. Hit the follow button and then you'll get that information as soon as they release it. Okay, on today's podcast, I have Ed Dawson, Managing Director of Prospects Oil & Gas, PXOG, and Ed gives an update on their gas investments in Romania, Italy and Spain. Also on the podcast, Keith Alone, CEO of Powerhouse Energy, PHE, talks about his contribution to the New Scientist magazine and progress at the company. Also on the podcast, João Andrade, CEO, and David Brigland, CFO of Wide Sales Group, WTC, and they discuss their fundraise and also progress of the company. Plus, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ed Dawson, Managing Director of Prospect Oil & Gas. PXOG is the ticker there. Ed, thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
Now, since we last spoke, Ed, you've released some news, some updates on your portfolio, and we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, for people listening, new to the podcast or new in the investment scene and not familiar with Prospect Oil & Gas, can you summarise what the business is about, please, Ed?
Yeah, Prospect Oil & Gas is a AIM-quoted investment company, investing, as the name suggests, in the oil and gas sector. As it stands today, we have a portfolio of investments in Europe. We have a solid foundation in half an exploration block in Romania, which we've found some gas on. We have a sixth of a block in Italy, and we also have the right to take a 49% project in Spain.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's go through some of the highlights then. So first of all, let's go back to the Italian concession there, and tell us just a little bit about that Italy, the interest you have there, the investment you have there, and what's happening there.
Yeah, it's in the Po Valley. In fact, I mean, before I specifically talk about the Italian asset, these things all follow the same geological play. We're chasing, the four deep, and so we don't have quite a random walk around Europe, but so we're chasing a geological theme. But in Italy, we entered towards the end of last year with Po Valley United Oil and Gas, and there was a well drilled in December. We discovered gas, and we flow tested that in January, and the latest news on that is that the operator has now submitted the exploitation for the exploitation permit, which is all part of the process of getting us on production there.
Excellent stuff. And when is that, Ed, you're saying?
Well, they've submitted the permit.
Yeah.
We're looking to get on production in 18 months' time.
Okay, cool. Excellent stuff. And let's go over onto your onshore Romania asset, Bennett One Well, and take us through what's happening there, please. Got it?
Yeah, likewise. We drilled a well there in October, participated in that, and we have flagged in our latest results that's going to come on production now in the third quarter of this year. We've slipped over from the second quarter. But we are very close on that. From a permitting perspective, we've had, you know, the tier one approvals, six out of the seven tier two approvals. So once we get the final seventh out of that, it's effectively a resubmission of them all as a bundle. And then we get the building permit once that has gone through. And then we've got all the contractors lined up. We've done, or the operators done deals with the landowners, etc. And it's a tie-in line of effectively a mile. So once the permitting's done, it's all go.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're close.
Yeah, absolutely. And so is that the next sort of major sort of milestone or coming up in the company's timeline?
Well, I think, yes. I mean, it's certainly a milestone. You know, with production, you know, starting, we move from that pure simple E to E and a little P. So it's going to be good, yeah.
Yeah. And as far as other opportunities, have you still got your eye open for, you know, other things going on?
Yeah, I mean, we've always maintained an active BD program. And we're primarily, at the moment, looking at, I suppose, assets within, you know, close vicinity of where we are. Also, you know, so again, they fall into the same geological play. And, you know, entering into a country is, you know, it's a difficult and long process. You know, it takes time. And there's a big investment in that. So, you know, we've got some areas that we're really quite, you know, high graded out of the play, and we're going to keep, I think, focused on those.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, excellent, Ed. And anything else you want to update on?
Well, I mean, the project that will or could move the needle a huge amount is our Spanish project.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've said in the past that, you know, things are going well there. We are close to going back into the field with an MT survey, which will help, you know, give the prospects there some, you know, further definition. So, you know, we're looking forward to that. And, you know, going out into the field again is also part of, you know, working with the local community and getting them, you know, aware of what we're doing. And so it's all about ultimately, you know, moving and de-risking the project to retwinning the well that was drilled in the 50s and had a huge gas column in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Ed, well, listen, if someone is listening to this and they're not following the story but likes the investments you've made so far and the progress you're making, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, you know, we are a strong management team, which has, you know, had a history and clear history of delivering, you know, strong shareholder returns. We are an oil and gas, you know, company with a diversified portfolio that's got, I think, in my mind, a huge amount of embedded value, you know, with programs to unlock it. And because, you know, the three, you know, projects are all generating, you know, plenty of news flow. So I'm not sure whether that's three or four, Justin, but you decide.
Well, do you know what? A bonus one is always welcome, Ed. Thanks for that, fella. And hopefully, you know, you've got a lot going on. Hopefully we'll be chatting in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Keith Alone, Chief Executive Officer of Powerhouse Energy Group. That's PHE ticker. Keith, thanks for joining me again.
Thanks, Justin. It's always great to be here.
Yeah, and some good news coming up. Well, you've released some good news. We'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, Keith, for someone listening right now, I'm not familiar with the company. Can you summarize what Powerhouse Energy is all about, please?
So Powerhouse Energy is the premier provider and, in fact, the first UK provider of a waste-to-hydrogen solution that allows us to produce hydrogen from waste with a limited CO2 footprint, allows us to produce electricity with a substantially reduced CO2 footprint, and allows us to bring our small footprint, highly efficient solution to wherever the problem exists.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, so Keith, you're getting noticed because you were invited by New Scientist magazine to write for or to contribute to the insert titled The Future of Plastic, which was headlined by none other than Sir David Attenborough, who I suppose, you know, sort of highlighted this plastic problem to the world in that Blue Planet series, Blue Planet 2.
Indeed.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Take us through what happened, how this happened, and what you contributed then.
Well, I was really quite, I'm almost speechless because I was quite honored to be to have our company invited to discuss something that frankly has been near and dear to our heart for a couple of years, and we've recognized the impacts that plastics have had on our marine environment. And having at one point wanted to be an oceanographer, and having grown up with Jacques Cousteau, the impact of plastics on the marine environment was something that was really quite concerning to me. But people talk about a war on plastics, and Powerhouse is not interested in engaging in a war on plastics, because we see the challenge for plastics not being that they exist, but the mismanagement of the end of life plastics, the mismanagement of plastic recycling schemes. And we recognize that we can provide a solution that allows us to take that plastic waste out of the waste stream, out of a position to accidentally make its way into our oceans, and to extract every ounce of energy from that plastic in the most efficient, most environmentally robust, most economically worthwhile manner possible. So to have been invited to contribute our perspective to the future of plastics, we recognize, in fact, if one looks at studies, there's going to be something in the neighborhood of a 13% increase in plastics development over the next plastics generation over the next few years. There's more plastic that's going to be generated next year than the weight of every man, woman, and child on the planet. So there's an equivalent amount of plastic. In fact, there's a growing amount of plastic, more so than every man, woman, and child on the planet. So the idea that we're going to get away from plastics, I think, is naive. And more importantly, it's unnecessary. We look at plastic as our friend. Their plastic waste is something that we can again leverage and convert. We can extract every drop of hydrogen, if you will, from plastic waste or end of life tires or any other source of hydrogen rich waste streams. So again, the honor of being able to contribute to something that we hope brings even more awareness to the challenges that we face. We want people to engage in reuse. We want people to engage in recycling. But we want people also to recognize that we, Powerhouse Energy Group, are in a position to recover the full energy value extant in that plastic. So the policies that need to be supported and the policies that need to be created are the use of advanced technologies like ours that allow us to take something that has been looked at negatively and turn it into a positive solution. We're not converting plastic into diesel. That's one of the silliest things I've heard. We don't need more diesel in our world. What we need is a clean fuel like hydrogen. And some skeptics would say, look, hydrogen, that's great. That's a long-term solution, but it's not happening yet. And as I was saying to you, they're wrong. It's happening right now. It's happening as we speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And as far as, I mean, like I said, people, it seems to be at the moment, you know, electric vehicles are getting all the sort of attention. And we all know that every government pretty much in the world is shutting down or ceasing. They've put dates or, you know, end dates on when diesel and petrol cars will be allowed. So not much is known about the hydrogen economy, but you know more than anything. How are developments at the moment? I mean, are there many big movers, making big companies, you know, planning lots of money into this that we don't know about?
Absolutely. And so, you know, as has been our prediction for the last couple of years, industrial transport is where the early adoption of the hydrogen economy is going to start happening. Fuel cell sales, stationary fuel cell sales, which are far more efficient than internal combustion engines, stationary fuel cell sales have more than doubled in the last 2 years. And so it is accelerating. And so when one looks at the the adoption by major industrial players. One looks at Walmart, who has been for the last few years using hydrogen for all of their forklifts. They're looking at how they start converting their rolling stock, their lorries, their HGVs into hydrogen fueled vehicles. Anheuser-Busch has just made an announcement less than a month ago that they've acquired 800 or that they've ordered 800 HGVs for the delivery of their product. This is a major multinational corporation that just made a major, major investment in a technology that they would not have thought of pursuing if they didn't believe it worked. In fact, to give you a sense of the difference, they ordered 800 Nikola trucks and they ordered 40 Tesla trucks to test them. And so the commitment that they've made, you know, a 20-fold increase in commitment in fuel cell vehicles, because they recognize fuel cell vehicles and industrial transport are the only ones that make sense. Battery packs are going to effectively outweigh your capacity to carry a product in your truck. And so whereas fuel cells are 1/10, 1/20th the weight of a battery pack for a huge lorry. Mm-hmm. So the commitments that are being made by international multinational companies to hydrogen fuel cells, the fact that that Toyota has publicly announced the opening of a new production line specifically to focus on its fuel cell vehicles for building fuel cells, not for a particular car line, but that they're going to be opening the doors to a new fuel cell stack development. So companies have recognized that finally the time has arrived. And the other thing is that the opportunity has arrived for truly the delivery of decarbonized or ultra low carbon hydrogen. As I've said before, the mechanism by which hydrogen is produced today is one that generates 16 tons of CO2 for every ton of hydrogen. Our process is 1/16 the CO2 footprint that one is looking at from traditional hydrogen production. And so I think that, and I should mention that, you know, we're in contact and in conversation with the major players in the industrial transport and hydrogen economy, and they recognize that our process truly represents a significant stepping stone in the direction of a zero waste, zero carbon society that adopts hydrogen as its fuel of choice.
Yeah, well, that's what I don't understand is, you know, this hydrogen that's being created, like you say, as yeah. a, you know, mostly traditionally the way it's created has a massive carbon footprint. So that is not the way forward, is it, really?
That's exactly right. There are only two mechanisms that make any sense moving forward from a carbon perspective, from a low carbon perspective, electrolysis and the PHE DMG process. Those are the only two processes that can produce low carbon hydrogen. Now, and the challenge with electrolysis is that only works if you're using 100% alternative energy, if you're using 100% wind, or you're using 100% solar. The problem is that there are few places on this planet where you can get consistent wind or consistent solar access to produce hydrogen. And the problem is, if I'm producing hydrogen in the middle of the outback of Australia, having a miles square solar farm, getting that hydrogen around all of a sudden becomes non-economical. And so you've got to be able to produce distributed hydrogen, which means you've got to have your electrical generation, because you use electricity to split water to make that hydrogen and oxygen. And the only way that one can do that is if you have the electricity nearby, or you've got a major, you're up in the Orkneys, or you're up at the tip of Scotland, and you've got wind blowing, and you're using that mechanism to create hydrogen. But the point is, you've got to use that hydrogen near its point of creation for it to continue to be an economical solution and allow people to start migrating. Now, the other thing that is important to recognize is that we produce hydrogen at one third the cost that our nearest electrolysis competitor produces hydrogen. So we're producing hydrogen at one third the cost. That makes us a slightly more compelling opportunity.
Yeah.
So,
on, you know, your DMG unit there, and how are things progressing? Where are you with the development of this?
Great, excellent. So, people have been asking, where are we on planning and permitting? Where are we in engineering? Planning and permitting has been moving forward very aggressively. It is, however, contingent upon the completion, the completion of all of the engineering program. And as we've gone through engineering, you've got to keep in mind, one of the things that one does not want to do is rush engineering. So we've moved from a process demonstrator where we have been acquiring data for over a year now. We've been 14 months. We've been operating this process demonstrator at the University of Chester's Thornton Science Park at the Energy Center, and collecting every bit of data necessary to provide our robust, commercial, scalable, expandable solution. And we're now, I'd say that we're within 30 days, perhaps 45 days of completing the engineering program. And what that allows us to do is begin the procurement of the pieces of kit that we're going to be putting together. So I'm still wholly confident that we're going to be able to start delivering material to our site by the end of this year, and that we're going to be looking at interlocking those Lego blocks of our modular design and looking at commissioning parts of this process by the end of the year easily. And so it's things are moving forward aggressively, and you can expect some engineering announcements to be coming out in the near future. There have been some exciting developments over the past couple of weeks that we're looking forward to sharing with our investors. Mm-hmm. So, actually, in the market and in general.
Marvelous stuff. Well, Keith, for people listening right now, like the sound of this story, but are not following it as yet, give them three quick bullet point reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, we're a company that produces hydrogen from waste. There is another hydrogen producer in this country that has a 100 million pound market cap. We have an 8 million pound market cap currently. And we produce hydrogen at one third the price this other company does. So I'd like to recommend that people who are interested and who recognize that there is going to be a substantial value proposition and that we're at the bottom of the J curve in the hydrogen economy, to get on board and start following PHE.
Excellent stuff, Keith. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
We will, Justin. Thank you. Have a good day.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is João Andrade, CEO, and David Brigland, Chief Financial Officer of Widecells Group. WDC is the ticker there. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Thank you.
Hi, Justin.
Now, we've got a couple of questions coming up as to what's been happening of late. Before we do, for people not aware or not familiar with Widecells, João, give us a 30-second summary as to what Widecells Group is all about, please.
Well, Widecells Group, we are an international provider of stem cell services, and our mission is to make stem cell treatments accessible and affordable for families globally. While business is divided into three divisions, one is what we call Cell Plan, which is the world's first stem cell insurance plan to cover the costs associated with stem cell treatment. Widecells division is where we process and store stem cells from a baby's umbilical cord blood to protect families against future illness. And Wide Academy is our education and training division, where we provide accurate scientific and medical information for both healthcare professionals and parents that are looking to store their stem cells and to ensure the future of their families with our insurance policy.
Marvelous stuff. Okay. Well, listen, since we last spoke, quite a lot has happened. Firstly, let's talk about the share price suspension. Can you explain why trading was suspended and what happened there, Joe, please?
Quoted companies have to announce their results within 4 months of the their financial calendar year end, which in our case is the 31st of December, which means we had to announce our results until the end of April. Now, what happened was we were conducting a private placing, a fundraising since January this year, which took longer than expected. We had basically two plans, one to do a larger fundraise, which would involve some more serious international geographical expansion. And we had another plan, which was to just execute all the contracts we have for the next 12 months and carry on with our organic growth. Now, that all took longer. Basically, it's the legal and financial due diligence process, which has then delayed the publication of our annual results. Obviously, now we have put that behind our backs. We published our results. The shares have been released. And we have now completed the fundraising, which enables us to execute the plan for the next 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Well, now, obviously, good news that trading is now recommenced. And a key part of getting your shares trading, again, was the completion of the recent fundraise. So you've received commitments to raise what gross proceeds of just over $2 million. Firstly, can you run through this place and explain how it was conducted, David, please?
Yes. We initially completed we had commitments for a £1.47 million private placing, which we announced on the 10th of May. And we then followed that up with a live market book build using the Tethers app, which allows a wider cross-section of investors to be able to invest in placings. That raised just over £500,000, and the two together had come to £2 million. What we're pleased about is that the majority of the investment came from our existing shareholder base. We had a number of new investors come on board as well, but our largest investor, Mighton, who had a 10% stake, they've increased their stake beyond 10%, which is good to see. Directors, of course, have come in and put another £200,000 of their own money in as part of the placing. So about 10% of the placing has come from directors.
Okay, excellent stuff. And what will the funds be used for then, David?
We're focusing on the three divisions of the business. So wide cells for the cord blood processing and storage, we're starting to roll that out. We got our license earlier this year, and we're looking to increase the marketing on that in the second half of the year and start generating sales. The cell plan insurance product is expanding geographically, and we're wanting to invest in the platform so that it can go into different geographies and different countries. And the Wide Academy platform is going to be expanded so that it can become a way to generate revenues from people subscribing for information from the Wide Academy platform. The balance of the cash will be used for working capital as we go forward into the second half of the year and start to generate sales. We're going to need working capital to be able to support that.
Okay, excellent stuff. And so just to clarify, you know, with the fundraise now completed, are you now in a stable position financially?
Yes. The issue we had at the placing, and the reason that the accounts were delayed, was that we had to get this placing away to secure the funding we needed for the next 12 months. And along the way, we had to take out some bank debt at the end of last year in order to be able to get us to this point here. We've now got the funding in place. We'll probably keep the bank debt in place going forward. So we've got a nice balance of shareholders' funds and corporate debt funding the business going forward through 2018.
Marvellous stuff. And at an operational level, Joe, How have things been affected, or have they been affected as a result of the trading suspension?
They've not been affected by the trading suspension. Obviously, there's been question raised by some of our partners, as one would expect. But what we have seen is not only our teams have done a great job during this challenging period in carrying on and developing the our current plans and developing the business, but we have seen major support from our key partners, mainly for the insurance product and for our core button storage service as well. So none of that has stopped. And really, when we look at the company, one thing is looking at the share price going down due to the fact that we had an announcement that the shares that we are conducting a fundraising, and then that the shares had been suspended. All of that has obviously created a sort of an effect on the potentially on the perception that investors have in the company. But in reality, particularly over the past 6 months, we received the license for our stem cell processing facility in Manchester, a license to operate in the UK and throughout the whole of Europe, which was a major milestone for us to be able to start generating revenues for core blood storage services. We had also received the license for the cell plan products and started to run our pilot program in the UK. We signed agreements in different geographical locations for cell plan in Brazil, Thailand, Singapore, in India, in Spain. So we now have agreements for cell plan for the next 12 months. If we execute them properly and make it all go operational within the next 12 months at the timetable that we are working against, we'll see us meeting the internal forecasts that we have. And then White Academy platform also launched recently. We have strengthened the boards. And now with this fundraising, we have all the ingredients to start generating strong sales over the next 12 months. Mm-hmm. So basically what I'm saying is operationally, everything we had to do to be in a position to generate revenue from the three divisions and making the three divisions go live has happened. And now with the fundraise, we have the sufficient financial resources to execute the plan.
Excellent stuff. And looking ahead, you know, what are the key developments or milestones for investors to look out for?
Well, it's really much more now about, for example, with cell plan, we sign agreements with a number of stem cell banks so that they can start selling or offering the cell plan product to their existing clients who have already stored their baby stem cells and are currently uninsured against treatment, and also offering mainly the first year policy to old and new clients who are now deciding to store stem cells with them. We've signed contracts in Spain. We signed a contract with another leading stem cell bank in Brazil, but we have managed to sign up one of the 10 largest stem cell banks in the world, which is Cryoviva Group, based in Thailand with operations in both Singapore and India, with around 250,000 clients who have stored stem cells with them and around 25,000 new clients a year. And what we will be doing over the next 12 months, as David was mentioning, as the use of proceeds, it's really investing into bringing our platform and the cell plan product to these different markets and starting to generate revenue each time we go into a new market. And then in the white cells division, we are starting to generate sales in the UK, but we are looking to appoint agents to represent our white cells division and start promoting our stem cell storage service in different countries around Europe, potentially even in the Middle East. We are in conversations with a few partners already, similarly to what we have done with cell plan, discussing with stem cell banks. For white cells, we are discussing with potential agents, and that's something to look out for. But the most important aspect is following the completion of this fundraising, every pound that we have raised will be used to generate sales. That's our intention. And it's basically executing the contracts we currently have. Now, if we have other stem cell banks wanting to sign up for Cell Plan, and we have a number of discussions going on at the moment in Europe, in Asia Pacific, and also in Latin America with other stem cell banks, we'll have to look into our position at that time and look at our resources and then decide. We can sign them up, but then decide when we'll be able to launch, because the next 12 months we'll be heavily focused on executing the contracts we have in the different locations that we want to establish the product.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, Joe, listen, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of this, but are not following the story as yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, there are currently 4 million people in the world that have already paid around £2,000 to store their baby's umbilical cord blood stem cells. And stem cell treatments are very expensive and can cost up to £300,000. Now, what we have done is we developed the world's first stem cell insurance plan to make stem cell treatments affordable. So we have 4 million people that we want to offer our insurance products out there in the world. We have first mover advantage. We have a platform and global reinsurance and insurance capacity, which means we could go anywhere in the world. But we also have our own stem cell bank, which enables us to make revenues from both stem cell storage and also stem cell insurance. And we have an all-star team, as I like to call it, to execute the business plan moving forward.
Excellent stuff. Ciao, David, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, HMI, Harvest Minerals. At four, Tern, T-E-R-N, ticker. Doesn't take a genius to work that one out. At three, Anglo African Oil and Gas, AAOG. At two, Echo Energy, that's E-C-H-O. And number one, most followed company, they're on the podcast yesterday, actually, a brand new IPO. It's Block Energy, and that's B-L-O-E, and they have all producing assets in Georgia. All right, most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Boohoo, trading update. Apparently they've done really well for the back of that. Let me just check how much they've risen. I did see someone say they're up 50%. I thought, really? No, surely not. No, they're down. What's all that about? Anyway. Do they mean the revenue is up by 50%? I'm not sure. Maybe the revenue is up by 50%. The trading update. Let's have a quick look. So group total revenue is up by 53%. That's impressive. But they are down today, so it rose on that. You know, rose in anticipation of the news, and that's always, you know, that's always the case, or pretty much always the case. At four, Vesarion, director, shareholding. And Neil has sold a couple of shares there, and he's going to set up a sort of education centre for, graphene, all that related industry. So it's good. Some people criticise his selling of shares. He still holds 10.2% of the company, you know, and he's built this up from being a garage, essentially, a project in a garage, to now a 200 million market cap. And I genuinely believe it's undervalued. Why? Graphene can change so many industries, and Vesarion are becoming the market leader. And when you think this is a company just worth 200 million and the collaboration they have, what can it turn out to be? It could be massive. It could be a FTSE 250. It could be a FTSE 100 company. Could be, you know? Blue sky. It is a definition of a blue sky opportunity. Okay, at three, Fast Forward Innovations, investee company update, subscription into Fralis. And that's Leap. Frop Gaming, I think, part of that company. Leapfrog Gaming? I don't know. Leap Gaming. Whatever. At two, Botswana copper confirmed at the new A4 dome target. And I assume that is Metal Tiger. I can't see the ticker, yeah. And number one is from Echo Energy. Drilling commences at EMS 1001. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT Weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.